Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
My name is Lynn, and I'll be your host for another installment of the show. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Bobby Neer and Ken, but sadly Robert was unable to be here today. He'll be missed, but he'll be back for our show in 2 weeks. Today's episode up for discussion is number 39, called Nervous Man in a $4 Room.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Take you into this 8x8 hotel room, and we watch a penny ante crook make a decision. You better ask the room clerk the number of this room, and then come on up. Mr. Joe Mantell is the Nervous Man in a $4 Room.
But before I begin, I want to welcome guest number 2 and guest number 3. Thanks for being here with us. Nervous Man in a $4 Room stars Joe Mantell as Jackie Rhodes, a two-bit nickel-and-dime type of crook who's having a rough night in his cheap hotel room. He had just gotten a phone call from his boss, George, telling him that he had a big job for him to do that night. Well, Jackie was anxious to please George until he heard that the job was to kill a bar owner that night after his bar closed. Jackie has never killed anyone and doesn't want to do it. George comes to Jackie's hotel room shortly after that and tells Jackie that he's the best man to do it because nobody would suspect a two-bit crook like him. He gives him the gun that he'll need to kill the guy and tells Jackie that if the bar owner isn't dead by 2 a.m., Jackie will be dead when he comes back at 2:30. After George leaves, Jackie begins to have a terrible struggle and conversation with what's supposed to be his alter ego in the mirror. I guess it's his alter ego or his conscience. But his reflection is having a conversation with him and saying that he wants to be set free. Now, while Jackie himself is a nervous wreck and even more so over the job he was given, his alter ego is a very self-confident, cocky guy who shows up in every mirror in the room and Jackie can't get away from him. In fact, Jackie even passes out at one point because it's just too overwhelming for him. It's too much for him to take, so he passes out. And when he comes to, the alter ego is still there, and he's still talking to Jackie and reminding Jackie of every wrong thing he'd ever done in his life, all the times he ended up in prison, how he lost the only woman he ever loved because of his horrible life. And the alter ego wants to get out and take control and make a better life for himself than what he's had. Well, Jackie finally agrees, and right then his boss George comes back to the room. Jackie now confidently confronts him and tells him he's resigning from the crime business. He punches out George and throws him and his gun out of the room, and the old Jackie is now in the mirror, and the new Jackie tells him he's going to get a job and he's going to have a real life. He calls the front desk, says he's checking out, and he's not coming back, and then he leaves the room. And that's how it ends, and I'm afraid I can only use one word to describe this episode, and that word is boring. Watching a guy talking to his reflection for 25 minutes is not exactly riveting television viewing. And also, if Jackie was so hell-bent against killing someone, why didn't he just leave? His alter ego tried to convince him that he'd never get away with murder. And yes, I know he was scared to death of his thug boss, but there had to be some place he could go to get away from the creep. But then again, if he did that, there would be no show. But in this case, that might not have been such a bad thing. I'm not even sure if Jackie lived in that room full-time or if it was just for a week or so. I'm not sure. I got the impression that he lived there all the time. There really wasn't anything at all in the story to get excited about. Joe Mantell played his part very well, but the episode did absolutely nothing for me. I did like him seeing him punch out George, his boss, though, because while it wasn't all that thrilling, even that part, it was the only real action in the story. So I'm afraid this episode warrants a zero lousy rating for me. So Bobby, how do you feel about this one?
I feel I'm the luckiest man in the world. It's finally my turn to go first in our rotation, and I get to do one of the worst episodes of the series. Thank you very much. That's really, really nice. Yeah, this is a colossal bore, and I, for the life of me, I don't know why any writer, especially Rod Serling or anybody connected with that show, would think that an audience would want to sit still even for 23 minutes watching a man talk to himself. I'm horrified by it because I already went through that with King Nine Will Not Return when I had to watch a man wander around the desert talking to himself. Having survived that, I don't think I deserve this now to have to do it again. So it's a very unfortunate story, and that's really too bad because I think it's an intriguing idea, actually, and they could have done something with it. Instead of just having him sit in a room or stand by a mirror and talk to himself, why not have him actually go out to do this contract killing that he's supposed to do and have his alter ego or his mirror image, whatever, follow him out in the street to the designated place and try to talk him out of it while it's actually going on to see whether he could do it or not. That would have at least taken it out of the room, taken it out in the street, and it might have been more interesting to see what would happen. But to just stand there by the mirror for all those minutes is really, really totally boring. There's just, it's like you said, Lynn, there's really nothing there. Now, for people who like psychological stories in which the whole point of the story is changing somebody's mind or getting into their head, that's fine, but there's something really just too boring about seeing the story this way, and it just it's hard to stay awake during it. Now, before the show today, I went on the web to the Internet Movie Database to see whether there were any reviews of this episode, and six people wrote reviews, and every one of them loved it. They all thought it was great. As a matter of fact, it gets a 7.2 rating out of 10, incredibly enough. One person even calls it the best episode of the entire series.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, I know. Another one says it had a very nice atmosphere. Another one says it was an interesting psychological study, and on and on and on and on. Now,
they actually watched the entire series? They watched the entire series and said,
well, the first review says this is the best episode of the series. And now one person said it was an unexpected ending and exceptional acting. I will agree with that. It is good acting. It must be very difficult for one actor in a story in which nothing happens to simply talk to himself. It's not easy to carry that off. So I do admire that. But, you know, give the man something to do. Send him out into the street. Do something like that. It just doesn't work. Now the main actor in the story, Joe Mantel, for people as old as I am, or nearly as old as I am, this is one of those actors who you don't remember his name, but you know his face. He's been in countless, 40-year movie career, and he's always in supporting parts. It was an instantly recognizable face. And I didn't realize, as I had forgotten, he was in a very famous movie back just a year or two, or about 4 or 5 years before this Twilight Zone episode. He was in the movie Marty. Marty, played by Ernest Borgnine, he was his best friend. And he uttered a very famous line in movies, asking Marty over and over again, what do you want to do tonight? And Marty would say back to him, I don't know, what do you want to do tonight? And that went on and on in the story to show how desperate and boring their lives were. And he received an Academy Award nomination for that, although apparently he did not win. And he had a great career after that. He appeared in Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. He had an interesting career. He does a good job here. I mean, I wouldn't want to stand there and talk to myself in the mirror. I just specialize in boring other people, not myself. And I can't imagine such a thing. But, you know, you just can't stick a man in a room and have him just talk to himself. But apparently there were people who thought it was absolutely fascinating to watch that. I didn't. Now, I said in my review on the board when we did it, that I got so bored I went into the bathroom and saw my own image in the mirror, and my image implored me to not write any more about it than I had to so that I wouldn't bore everybody to death. So it's my intention not to do that here either. So I'll turn it over to Ken. Lots of luck, Ken, finding something to talk about.
All right.
Ken, before you start,
yes.
I just wanted to, one more time, I'd like to welcome guest number 2 and 3 and also guest number 4 now. Thanks for joining us. Sorry, Ken, go ahead.
All right, that's good. I'm going to give everybody a forewarning that
if you are a fan of the series and you think that every single episode is excellent or a classic, just a forewarning, because this is one of those episodes where I just have to slam not only the episode, but also the writer, the director, and the production crew, the hotel room, the mirror, the music, the end credits. I'm sorry, guys, but my time is valuable. I have many TV options, and this is another 23 minutes wasted in my life, and I can't get those 23 minutes back. So I was thinking of a song. You remember Neil Diamond, 1966?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, Lynn, what song did Neil Diamond write in 1966?
Solitary Man,
right.
Solitary Man, and if you remember some of the words, if I can remember, don't know that I will, da-da-da, but until I can find me, da-da-da-da, I'll be what I am, da-da-da-da.
Right.
A solitary man.
I knew this would be bad today, but I didn't think I'd have to listen to Ken sing, too. My God.
What is up with this series? The very first episode, Where Is Everybody?, was a solitary man, and he was a loner. That worked because you identified, you went along with the guy. He was in that town. It was creepy. You didn't know how it was going to end. That
and you didn't know that it was an experiment. You didn't know it was an experiment either. So that was good.
That episode worked. That kept me in tune. And I said, hey, this is a great series, The Unexpected, The Unknown. And so, you know, season one, as it went along, we got some duds along the way, but we got some classics. We have a book out on it. So if you want to see what every single episode and a detailed description of the episode and the reviews and also some commentary of suggestions on how the episodes could have been better, check out Amazon, check out The Twilight Zone, Revisited and Reviewed Volume 1. So anybody out there listening, pick up a copy, and you'll be glad you did. Now, for this episode, I agree with both of you that not much to it. A guy in the mirror, he's very nervous, and the script, you kind of are just waiting for something, you know, eerie or strange to happen, but it doesn't deliver. It's almost like you have a premise, but there's no beef. You have a sandwich, but there's no beef in the sandwich. It's just bread. In fact, there's no mayonnaise. It's just bread. In fact, the bread is dry. The bread is moldy, and the bread is old, and the end does not deliver. And that's very disappointing. You're watching as a viewer. You want to see something. And I guess the moral of the story is if you're a nervous man, and if you stand long enough in the mirror, and then the mirror is telling you what to do, then you'll just change from not being nervous anymore, but maybe now you'll get a job and get a girlfriend or something. Sorry, Rod, it doesn't work. You're a solitary man. You tried with King Nine Will Return in the desert, and that fell flat. And now here you go again. I mean, there was another character in the show, but he didn't have much to do. Basically, it's just this Joe guy, the whole episode. So I'm sorry to slam the episode, guys, but the Twilight Zone, they should have had a focus group back in 1960-61. And before they put out the episode, maybe get 10, 15 people in a room and show them the episode. And then afterwards say, okay, guys, what'd you think? And I'm sure there'll be 5 or 6 or 7 saying, hey, not much to it. 3 or 4 will say, hey, I like the mirror. And 2 or 3 will say, hey, I like the actor. But maybe get some feedback before you put it on the television show. If I'm going to invest into a series, I want the best I've got each week. Now, you can explore all the avenues, and they did in season one. You know, you've got space, you've got religion, you've got music, you've got the loner,
You can get into geography, history, geology, whatever you want to do, the planets, the sun, the stars, whatever you want to do in the series. There's so many angles that you can produce episodes with and give it the best you got. Time Enough at Last, The Hitchhiker. You know what works. I mean, I was listening on the sports radio. This is a true story. During the week, I'm gardening, and these guys were talking about a football team. And all of a sudden, the guy goes, you know, it reminds me of that Twilight Zone episode, Time Enough at Last. Just right out of the blue, that guy remembered the episode. And sure, everybody who's watched the series remembers that episode.
That's true.
And I told you when I was a kid, you know, the one Mirror, Mirror stuck with me. And to this day, I've seen it 5 or 6 times, and I just remember the episode, The Hitchhiker. Another one that just stays with you. Monsters Due on Maple Street. Let's see, the other one was, how about that Ronnie McDowell episode?
People are alike all over.
That ending delivered.
That's a great episode.
How about Living Doll from the last season?
Yes, Talking Tina. You know the key to that episode? Telly Savalas.
Oh, of course.
But another one, Stop at Willoughby. I'm talking about season one here.
But Ken, I have a question to ask you. In your review on the board, I don't have it in front of me right now. You had mentioned the number of times that up until this point that they had done stories about isolated people, you know, talking to themselves.
Yeah.
And I think you named something like at least four episodes already. So, you know, I have to wonder whether something psychological is in here. If Rod Serling wrote all of those stories, whether he was feeling kind of that way himself, even though he's already become very famous, you got to wonder why a man would keep writing stories about people alone or, you know, because a lot of famous people have suffered from that, have felt alone, even though they're well-known.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that was a favorite theme with him. Do you think the story would have been improved at all by moving it out in the street, out of the room?
I do, yeah. That would have made it more, given it a little more action.
You know what? The only way to make this episode work is to have Agnes Moorehead show up, guys.
Oh, jeez.
That's the only way. In fact, instead of looking at himself in the mirror, Agnes Moorehead shows up, and she tells him what to do, and then the audience gets excited, really.
Yes, especially if she's shown up as Endora.
Endora, that's pretty scary. Oh,
you know, I tried to come up with an alternate storyline, how can you make it better? I always do that. When I watch something, if I'm disappointed, I say, all right, Ken, if you're so smart, what would you do, Ken? How would you make it better? This one, I have no idea what to do. I mean, he's in the room, looking at the mirror, talking. And then, you know, it's a black and white episode. So, I mean, there's no grass. There's no green grass. There's no flowers. There's no sunshine. It's at night.
Well, I think Bobby's suggestion about, you know, taking it outside and, you know, actually showing a little action, like maybe him going into the bar and pointing the gun at the guy and, you know, then he changed his mind.
I wanted his better self from the mirror to be following him around and whispering in his ear and telling him, you don't really want to do this, you know, like he was doing in the room.
Right, well, he would point a gun at the bar owner and then his alter ego would talk him out of it, he'd drop the gun and walk
right
out or something, you know, just something,
yeah,
to give a little action.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking the mobster mentality of the 50s and 60s maybe played a role in writing scripts in that era. I want to get back to the focus group, but what do you think? Would that have helped the series if, let's say, Rod Serling said, hey, before I produce it on Friday, let's get 10 people and get their feedback. You think that would have worked?
Well, I have no objection to it, but nobody was doing that back at that time. The word focus group wasn't even known, so, yeah, it couldn't hurt any. But, you know, the funny thing about The Twilight Zone is it has this great pedigree as being one of the great series of all time, and it is. But only because, in my opinion, only because their exceptional stories are exceptional. As a series that's consistently good from week to week, I think it's a failure, don't you, Ken?
Well, we haven't done them all, and I have to go back and really study each one. But how would you rate season one generally?
Oh, I think about on a scale of 1 to 5, about 3.
Oh, good.
I wouldn't go any higher than that, yeah. I think the series has problems, and you've mentioned it in your reviews. You always go and say, well, this was bad and that was bad, and we've had 3 in a row, whatever. Consistency, of course, there is consistency on TV today. Everything is bad. But in those days, there were some exceptional series. This is not the only one. And it all depends on whether I place great value in a series being consistently interesting, at the very least, from week to week to week. Not necessarily a classic. The thing about The Twilight Zone, and when you hear people talk about it like we do every 2 weeks, and when you hear other people talk about it, please take note. They'll say, oh, yeah, that was a great series, and then they start picking and choosing episodes that everybody knows, like the ones you mentioned, Time Enough Last, The Hitchhiker, Monsters of Duel Maple Street, things like that, rather than saying, oh, my goodness, there are too many to name because there are a lot of low points. Now, I never felt that way until we started the group, until we started doing this show. I used to do the same thing. If anybody said, what do you think of The Twilight Zone? I said, oh, it was terrific. Yeah, every week, week after week after week. It was just the most fascinating thing. I couldn't get enough of it. But when you do reviews like we do, and when you start digging behind everything, you get to see that in reality there are too many low points, especially for a writer like Rod Serling. There are too many stories that just don't match up. And you, more than anybody, have been very hard on those stories, and I agree with you. But there's really not a lot of consistency. I mean, there's a lot of low moments, and this is one of them. So I wonder sometimes if the series could have been a little bit better if the stories had been more. There's just too many really, really low points. It's a wild swing from absolutely incredible stories that are remembered 50 years later to stories that are forgotten 50 minutes after they begin. That's the problem I have with that. And you've pointed out in several of your reviews when we've gotten into low moments, this is the X number of times we've done stories about people being isolated and alone. You mentioned that about the going back in time. There's been too many episodes about going back in time. Does that really bother you that they keep repeating themes?
Yes. The key for me is once I've seen it, will I watch it again? Now, the time travel, I don't mind it. I like the movie, what was it, Rod Serling? What year was that? 60, 61? The Rod Serling, Rod Taylor.
You're talking about the H.G. Wells story.
Yeah, Time Machine.
Oh, Time Machine.
Yeah. Yeah, with Rod Taylor.
That was an excellent movie until we got to the end.
Yeah.
And we saw those creeping guys. That ruined it. That was a terrible ending. You can't end the story like that. Where he's how many years? He was 300,000 years into the future, and you run into the Eloi, those creeping things. That's not the end of the world. Come on. Anyway, but the time travel in the Twilight Zone.
Wasn't your all-time favorite in that? Wasn't that Susan Oliver?
She wasn't in that one, though.
She wasn't? I thought it was her. Okay.
Oh, it was that other blonde girl there. Yeah, she was all right. But,
tends to repeat the space theme a lot, too. The space theme. Yeah. And I'm not particularly fond of a lot of the space stories in Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Repeat space over and over and over again.
Well, there are certain things that keep coming up again and again and again.
Oh, yeah, like in season one. Didn't he have like 4 space-related episodes?
Maya can. Ken keeps track of them.
Yeah, I shot her into the air. And a bunch of them.
I counted 5 space. I counted
in
4 religion. You know, you have the devil. How about the devil showing up again and again? What's up with that?
Oh, he's in a lot of them, yeah. He's in a lot of episodes.
Hey, but I tell you what, guys. You know, on the board right now, we just did Dust and Back There. Guys, we're getting close because episode 51, not 50, 50 is the whole truth. But episode 51, The Invaders.
Okay.
Hey, I have a special request. Can I write a very long review on the Invaders?
Be my guest.
Oh, get ready.
You want to go first for that one when we do it?
I tell you what.
He wants to write a long review on the board.
Oh, on the board, sure.
I tell you what, in the top 10, my top 10, I've revealed my number one, which is Mirror Image, because I was a kid when I saw it. But number two, guys, is the Invaders. And if you guys want to know what the Twilight Zone essence is all about, that episode, every single detail, I've seen it five times. And we'll talk about it later, but just a foretaste. Every single scene is crucial in that episode until the last moment. I mean, you cannot leave the room and miss one. You can't miss 5 seconds of that episode.
I agree.
That's a classic. That's definitely a classic episode.
That's how good not only the acting, the direction, the production, the set. And, you know, the end, I won't give it away if you haven't seen it, but, hey, anybody out there in Twilight Zone land, go to YouTube, put in The Invaders, 1961, Twilight Zone, and it'll come up, and just watch it. That's how you produce an episode.
Right.
It's an excellent classic episode, definitely. This one.
Oh, by the way, Ken, I went to IMDb, and you're right. The blonde in The Time Machine is Yvette Mimieux.
Mimieux, that's right.
She didn't have much of a career, though, did she?
Not really. I don't know where she is. She must be about 80 years old. I don't know.
But that
was an excellent movie, except for the whole Eloy thing. That was really a pain. So.
Why didn't Rod Taylor take the girl back with him? How could he leave that girl?
I don't know.
Listen, I want to let our listeners know. For their reference, we do have a Yahoo discussion group for the Twilight Zone, and I have just posted the link to that group on the chat room, which I'm sure you all can see because you're all in the chat room. And, of course, reviewed is misspelled because it was originally just misspelled that way, and we left it there. We just left it that way. So don't worry about it. Well, you've got the link. You just copy and paste the link into your browser, but if you type it in, it is REVIWED. One of the E's is left out. That was a mistake. We left it alone, but we do have a discussion group, so feel free to join. We discuss all the episodes one at a time in chronological order. And unfortunately, our good friend and loyal listener and contributor Dave is not here today, so we don't have him to go to. So, I don't know. Do you have anything else to add? Any of our guests want to say?
I thought it was a miracle we could say that much about it, actually.
Yeah.
Here's what we can do. If there's ever a poor episode, then we can just, you know, give our own opinions on how the series is going up to this point, and then what they can do better or what we're looking for. Or what's worked in the past, and why this certain episode that we talked about today didn't work. I think the main problem with Nervous Man is that it just did not deliver in the end. What happened in the end? I'm trying to remember. I saw it.
He punches out his boss, and the alter ego comes out.
And he takes over. Right.
And he gains control, and he says, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to get a job. He punches at the boss. Tells
him right, and the coward ends up back in the mirror, right, to change places.
Yeah. And he ends up in the mirror, and he says, well, what now? And he says, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to make my life better. And he calls the front desk, and he says, I'm checking out of here. I'm not coming back. And he leaves. Well, there you go. That's the end of the story.
If only Rod Serling had looked in the mirror in his image and said to him, look, you can write a better story than this. It might have turned out differently.
That's true.
The problem with this, I think you'll agree, is the same problem that was with King Nine Will Not Return. The same thing. There's just nothing going on. There's just one man wandering around talking to himself. We didn't like that either.
So what's the next episode we're doing?
I don't know.
2 weeks from now, we are doing A Thing About Machines.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
I don't like that either.
That's all right.
We're going to be coming up on some good ones, so just be patient, my friend.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I have a list in front of me. I just went to the list of Twilight Zone episodes. A Thing About Machines.
The next one good?
Yeah. All right, then the next one is The Howling Man.
That one's not bad.
And then guess what? The one after that is The Eye of the Beholder.
I said we were coming up on some good ones.
Actually, you know what? If you went on the street corner, Lynn, let's say you went on a street corner in Seattle, Washington, and you just talked to someone and said, hey, you know about the Twilight Zone series, right? And they'll go, yeah, I've heard about it. And you remember that episode, Eye of the Beholder? I bet you 9 out of 10 people will say, yeah, I saw that one.
If they know the title.
You can tell them the title and then what happened with the girl with the mask on and all that. I would say 9 out of 10 would remember that episode.
Yeah, and the first thing they would say is, that's the one with Ellie Mae Clamp in it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we are coming up with some good ones. Howling Man, I love. Eye of the Beholder, I love. But 2 weeks from now, we are doing a thing about machines, so we will muddle through that one and get to the good ones. Does anybody else have anything to add?
No, I'm empty.
That's about it.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of the people who are here with us today. Thank you, folks. Guests 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I thank everyone for showing up today, and we will be back in 2 weeks right here with A Thing About Machines. So everyone have a wonderful week ahead of them and a good weekend, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Bye, everybody.